Yeah, hello everyone. It's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is September the 24th, 2020, day before my birthday, actually. And so today we are going to talk about mindfulness techniques for athletes, and also for actually these mindfulness techniques work for business, for people in the performing arts, for musicians, for anyone that in life you can use these. And so while we're talking here, you know, think about your own experiences with this topic, how you use mindfulness and how you can use it with your athletes and clients that you're working with. So talk about the experience of mindfulness for athletes, and I wanted to talk about, you know, different examples, case studies, and that type of focus. So many times we hear athletes talk about problems with overthinking a situation, and the mind is too busy, and so we want to be able to get that right focus to be able to handle any situation, to be in the present currently for now. So we'll talk about having that sustained focus for sports, and having a present focus for life rather than just focusing only on the past, your mistakes of the past, or worry about the future, to be focused on the present. And also improving your awareness in all situations, and having an attitude of kind of acceptance of whatever is happening, and to not be so reactive to things, with perspective on what is happening, and being able to quiet the mind, quieting the brain. And there's different techniques for that that have been developed, like mindfulness-based stress reduction, mindfulness-based mental training, and talk about, you know, your breath is key, breath awareness and different ways you can use your breath. Doing a body scan is a really powerful technique. And then, of course, you know, when you're doing mindfulness techniques, you don't have to be completely still. You can actually use mindfulness while you're doing your sports, while you're walking, running, swimming, biking, any sport. You can be mindful at that time. And then, you know, just simple things that we do throughout the day, like eating, recovering, resting, you can use mindfulness techniques there. And then how to do interventions with mindfulness for your athletes, like helping them with reducing anxiety and improving sleep and being able to improve their mood, that sort of thing. So I just wanted to dive into those topics, and think about any questions or comments you might have, or examples from athletes that you have worked with. I know I've been working with athletes for over 30 years now, and so many of them, that's the number one complaint is anxiety or their mind being too busy and overthinking, and wanting to be able to, you know, have that quieter mind and be able to think more in terms of, you know, what's happening right now. And so I wanted to give you some examples of that, and you know, think about it for yourself as well. You know, we say 90% of performance is mental, and yet we spend the majority of time and efforts and money on physical training, of course, technical training. And you know, what we can do as performing edge coaches is really focus on the mental part, and one technique with that is mindfulness. There's only so many ways that we can continue to get faster and stronger and in our sport, but if you change the overall mindset, then you can see, I think, results faster. And so I think increasingly we're seeing elite athletes and sports programs, and professional athletes, Olympic athletes are incorporating mindfulness, meditation, other practices into their training regimen. And by learning to stay focused on the present moment, these competitors really can unlock a new edge on their and have a better chance against their competition, you know, and while feeling better with themselves. So mindfulness can be a real key to performance and feeling better. And I think in any competitive situation, you know, it's only natural that your adrenaline starts to pump. Of course, you know, we need that to be able to do better. Your heart beats faster, your palms get sweaty, you feel butterflies in your stomach. When you're on the line for a big race and you're in the middle of a high-stakes game, you know, how many athletes are able to really stay connected with themselves and the here and now? Most of the time we're all over the place, or maybe thinking of technique or different things that we need to do, and our mind gets flooded with thoughts of maybe previous errors, or we jump ahead to the future thinking, what's this going to mean for my career if I mess up? Am I going to lose my sponsorship? Am I going to lose my my scholarship at school, or thinking of the consequences of what's going to happen for that performance, especially high-level performance like Olympic athletes that can make or break a career kind of thing. But if you're just focusing on that only, then, of course, that's going to really cause you to mess up. And when our brains get caught up in the past or thoughts of the future, it creates the stress response, of course, and you can't use that part of the brain that keeps us engaged in the moment. So, you know, that's why these mindfulness solutions can really help, because that mental chatter can make it difficult to maintain a present focus. And if we're too stressed about our performance, then we can't make good decisions, you know, and, you know, kind of on the fly, solve problems that really need to be able to stay focused and composed. A lot of times we need to make those last-minute adjustments. You know, I worked with athletes at the Olympics in many sports, say pole vaulting, for instance. Lots of adjustments need to be made just depending on the weather, the wind, how everything is responding, how your pole is functioning, and all these things have to be taken into account right at the last minute. And so our thoughts and internal behavior, our internal dialogue, that can create a stress response that impacts our behavior. And what we're telling ourselves, of course, affects what we see, and then what we see affects what we feel. And so there's different studies that have been done that have found that increased stress and anxiety, really including fear and failure, they do affect athletic performance in competitive situations. So what we want to do is be able you want to be able to sort of, you have the fear, but you want to quiet it down. And so one study showed that those who reported a greater sense of mindfulness, that work on mindfulness, are likely to, you know, experience that sense of flow. You've probably heard of the sense of flow, that feeling of being totally in the moment, and that's linked to enhanced performance. So, and mindfulness, in terms of the brain, I just wanted to mention how the brain works with this, that mindfulness helps train the prefrontal cortex. That's the part that's in the forehead of the brain, the part of the brain that creates a calm and alert state and helps us stay focused, and so we can avoid distraction and perform our best. So when you have mindfulness, you're breathing slowly, you're staying relaxed, and so it's really helping that prefrontal cortex part of the brain that makes decisions to be able to stay calm. And it's one of the best ways to stay calm. That stress response in the brain allows us to notice our thoughts. You want to notice your thoughts and your emotions without getting attached to them. And so it also helps to lower your resting cortisol levels. Cortisol is a hormone also called the stress hormone. When we get stressed, that cortisol level increases, and that's going to affect everything that we do. So when you are mindful and when you're at that state of just being in the present, you're able to lower those cortisol levels. And then when you bring your attention inward and just, you know, be focused on yourself in the present, there's another part of the brain called the insular cortex of the brain. The insular cortex, it's I-N-S-U-L-A-R, as I pronounce it, or how you spell it, insular cortex of the brain. And that, as a result, we experience a heightened state of awareness of our body and improve the communication between the body and the mind. The insular cortex is like a connector between the body and the mind, the communicator, which is critical, of course, with athletes. And so it helps us to sense physiological changes, often even before we're consciously aware of them. So if something is happening where we need to make a quick adjustment, something's happening with, let's say, you know, a baseball player is at the bat. I know we've got Greg in this course and Farley, who just joined our course too, are both hitting coaches and coach with baseball. And so, you know, the batter needs to make those fine adjustments. I know that some of you are on the call now and just listening muted in the background, so that's fine. And later, if you have questions, you can always ask them here. So being able to, when you're batting, you've got to make those fine adjustments. Sometimes you might need to move closer to adjust your handle on the way you're holding the bat or your body position. And sometimes your body, the insular cortex of the brain, responds, it communicates between your mind and body, tells your body what to do, how you need to change something really quickly, even before you're consciously aware of it. And when you're in a mindfulness state, being more relaxed and more in the present, you can use that part of the brain to so that your mind and body are communicating better and more quickly, and you can be more in a sense of flow, as opposed to a lot of baseball players talk about overthinking and doing too much thinking, trying to anticipate what the pitcher is going to do, rather than just letting the ball come to them and react, respond at that moment. You got to respond in the moment. And so, when you're mindful, then you can make those split-second adjustments even before you're consciously aware of what's going on, before those factors have a chance to impact your performance. So I wanted to just talk about that a little bit, how mindfulness affects what we're doing as athletes, and we want to improve that mind-body connection and manage our thoughts and emotions that might arise during competition to make sure that the negative thoughts maybe don't arise in the first place. But if they do arise, to be able to just relax and reduce them through, we also use powerful music and stories. And you can use specific exercises to develop the ability to tune out the distractions. So I wanted to give you some techniques for doing that. Some of the simple things that you could do are, taking a few minutes a day in the morning when you're an athlete, or this works, of course, for business or for any other life decisions. Also, before you engage in athletic events, you can bring on a sense of calm and clear state of mind. Just being able to focus on your, regulate your breathing. If it becomes shallow, you know, you want to breathe more deeply. You want to sit comfortably and close. Or you can do it standing as well. I know a lot of athletes are really active and like to just move around. You can do it walking, just closing. But if you're sitting or standing in one place, you can close your eyes and then just start to deepen the breath and inhale, exhale fully, and focus on your breath entering and exiting your body, and just start with, say, 2 or 3 minutes, and then you can build up to 5 minutes from there. And then you can practice what I call a body scan. So you want to be able to release tension and quiet the mind. You want to just bring your awareness to your body in a real systematic way. So you lie down on your back and with your palms up, facing up, and your legs relaxed, and then close your eyes and start with your toes, and then just notice how they feel, and then ask yourself, are they tense? Are they cold? Are they warm? What do they feel like? What do they need right now? And then focus a few breaths there, and then just move on to, let's say, the soles of your feet, and you just repeat that process. If you do notice that anything is real tense, like especially in the shoulders, you can just notice it and then just let the tension go, or you can do muscle relaxation exercise. You can incorporate that into it, and you can tense the hold your shoulders up tight against your neck real tight for about 5 seconds. You can all try that right now if you want, just to experience that. And then once you tell your muscles to tighten up, you accentuate the tension, then you want to let go, breathe out, and then the tension wants to release even more. So you can do that, tense and relax each muscle, or you can just go through and become aware of it and then just let tension go. You move, start with your feet, and then you can move up to your legs and then up to your knee, your thigh, and bring your attention to your hips, your lower back, and then your stomach, your chest, your shoulders, arms, hands, and neck and head. Or sometimes you can just do, if one particular area is bothering you, like your neck or head, just focus on that, maintaining your body focus, and then any tensions there. And just breathe into those areas and breathe into any areas that are holding stress. Imagine you just taking a nice deep breath and breathing a nice fresh breath of air into that area. And then just try to release the stress or the tension. And as you engage in that practice more regularly, you become highly attuned to what's happening in your body. So you can do that body scan really easily. And then a third real quick exercise would be to pay attention to your internal dialogues or your stories that you're telling yourself or your family or your friends that can reflect, and it even shapes your mental state more than you might think. Like a athlete might say, I can't run that fast, or I'm never going to beat this other athlete, this other competitor, or I hope I don't miss the goal, I hope I don't miss my time, and I hope I don't miss that spot on the team, that kind of thing. I always tell people, do say what you do want, don't say what you don't want. So notice your thoughts and emotions and don't judge them, or don't become too attracted to them. You just have it be there. You say, okay, it's okay to notice the feelings that are there. But not to take it, that emotion into your next shot or your next play, but just be able to notice it and then let it go. Just say, you know, it's kind of like looking up at the sky and a cloud is going by, and your mind, your brain is the sky, and then a cloud that's going by is like a thought. The thought's just kind of moving by, just like clouds in the sky. And it's easy to just watch them float by and watch them come and then watch them go. And thoughts can come and go just as easily. So thinking of it like that, like a cloud in a blue sky, is a good example of being able to observe your thoughts. And I wanted to just give you a definition of mindfulness. It's, you know, people define it different ways, but it's basically just maintaining a moment-by-moment awareness of our thoughts, our feelings, our body sensations, and our surrounding environment. And so mindfulness, it involves acceptance, meaning that we pay attention to our thoughts and our feelings without judging them, and so without believing, or, for instance, without believing there's no right or wrong, there's no good or bad, there's no up or down. There's just thoughts, a way to think, the way that we are thinking or feeling in a given moment. And while we practice mindfulness, our thoughts tune into what we're sensing in the present moment rather than rehashing the past or imagining the future. So some of the, you know, there's been work by, of course, it was has its roots in Buddhist meditation, but now everyone seems to be using, you don't necessarily need a spiritual connection to it. You can use the secular practices of mindfulness that are in throughout the world, especially with Jon Kabat-Zinn and his mindfulness-based stress reduction. He was launched at the University of Massachusetts Medical School in 1979. And since that time, there's been thousands of studies that have documented the physical and mental health benefits of mindfulness in general, and you know, countless programs that have adapted this for athletics, for schools, and hospitals, just about everywhere. And so, I wanted to talk also about why to practice mindfulness, what it's good for. But first, just let me check in, see if anyone has questions or any comments. Do you have examples of anyone that you're working with that you would like, that this might be helpful with? Or do you have athletes or examples of people who may be overthinking or might be too anxious? Anyone can jump in. Anna L., are you there? You can give an if you have any thoughts or examples or questions.
No, for me it's good.
Yeah, okay. Are you working with anyone right now?
One more time?
Are you working with any clients now or friends?
Yes, I'm working with a client today. For example, I'm working about a client who tried to find the motivation because he would like, he has got a project, he would like to do a business, but he doesn't find enough time to do his business. And finally, after many questions, the main problem was the fact that he need to have more precision about the reason why he would like to do this business, because the motivation is there, and we are working on that.
Okay, great. Yeah, so motivation to work on his business.
So maybe I can use mindfulness to have more confrontation, for example.
Right, yeah, this works in any kind of situation. And I think you can combine, you know, some people who say you just work on mindfulness, being in the present moment. But I think you can, I'm very much a proponent of visualization techniques, of course, and I think you can combine visualization techniques with mindfulness techniques also. because I think athletes and business, anyone that's performance oriented, wants to, you know, we're goal oriented, right? And so it's important to mentally rehearse what you want to see and be able to have a mental picture in your mind of where you want to go. So you know, if you can have your person in business, they can work on, you know, just the breathing process, but also be able to work on finding out what he would like his business to look like, and what would be a typical day for him, a really successful day, and visualize that. So use the mindfulness part to first filter out thoughts of the past and the negative thoughts, and just be able to get into the present. First use mindfulness techniques to slow down the mind, get focused, and then you could use visualization techniques as the heart of the matter, really getting into what it is that he wants to do, and visualize, you know, what his day would look like. Or sometimes it's good to visualize the obstacle and how to get through that. Like imagine a distraction or something comes up that gets in the way. Imagine that for a short time, and then say, okay, how are we going to get through this distraction? Imagine yourself being able to just, you know, you can use mindfulness to take a deep breath and just let it go, let the distraction go. Let it fade into the background and say, okay, if that's something I need to attend to, I'll just put that over here in another, almost like compartmentalizing, putting that thought into another compartment, another, like a file folder, and say, I'll be able to come back to that later. So, yeah, so that's a good way to be able to, and then get back to motivation and saying, you know, you could use visualization and mindfulness together, again, saying, okay, if motivation were, because I have a similar situation right now with a new client, a guy who's an athlete and also a student, and he at college and wants to be able to be more motivated for his studies. He's really smart, you know, and easily gets straight A's, but just has trouble focusing on being able to study. And so, and motivation is his problem too. So just like you, Al, and other people on the call here. So, you know, imagining if motivation, if, you know, what you want to do is, you know, imagine yourself being attracted to that thing that you want to do. Like my student, if there's something that he gets, you know, find something that he's really passionate about, and then say, okay, I want to work on that section, that part of it, just one step at a time, being able to work on that and focus. So imagine that it's something really, you know, attach it to something that they really enjoy or really get excited about. So, you know, imagine yourself, you know, with this, you know, really being attracted to, let's say with business, with Anael, with your client, that they are wanting to be able to do this project. Imagine what it would feel like to get partway through the project and feel that sense of accomplishment, and then get halfway through the project and almost like a race too, and then feel another sense of a real accomplishment there. And then a third way, being able to feel very accomplished with, you know, getting through and then all the way through finishing something completely, and then being able to see what that looked like, to say, wow, I went all the way from point A to point B and was able to finish what I started with, and be able to celebrate or reward yourself in some way. So, you know, being able to see the whole process there, I know that can really help to, you know, see a picture of what it is that you want to achieve. So, yeah, so that's a good example on, you know, of using mindfulness for motivation and imagining yourself. What would that, and asking them, do maybe a visualization around that, what would that feel like to be motivated? And then think, okay, what was another time in your life that you were really motivated to do something? Everyone's had some point, some time when they felt really motivated to do something, maybe it was something easy, maybe it was something really difficult that they needed to get through, and it was something they really wanted to learn, maybe learning a musical instrument, maybe going on a trip somewhere, maybe learning a new skill. And imagine, think of that time when you were really motivated. What did that feel like? What did it, what did you do? What kinds of things were you inspired to do? Maybe something that you did that you never thought you could do. You never dreamed that you could do this one thing. And yet here you are doing it. You know, imagine that. Or if you have trouble with that or can't really imagine it, then, you know, think of probably some people have read stories or seen a movie of someone that was really motivated, a hero of theirs or an athlete, role model. Think of someone that achieved something that was really amazing and then be able to incorporate those same kinds of thoughts and feelings into your own life. So, yeah, so motivation is really a good one to work on with mindfulness. So, yeah, thanks for the question, Anna-El, and I want to talk a little bit here about why to practice mindfulness. Of course, I talked about, you know, our athletes and clients are usually having problems with overthinking and have too much busyness in the mind. And it's the good news is that studies have shown that, you know, practicing mindfulness, even for just a few weeks, can bring a variety of physical, psychological, social benefits, all those things. And so some of the benefits, I've been doing this for 30 years and with athletes of all across the spectrum, of all levels, people just getting started to professional and Olympic athletes with lots of different issues. And I know I've experienced all kinds of benefits with the athletes, and you can experience them too with yourself as a coach, as a performing edge coach. You know, it's good for you to practice these mindfulness techniques yourself so that you can be a role model, of course, for your athletes, for your clients too. So mindfulness is really good for our bodies. There's one study that showed just after 8 weeks of training, practicing mindfulness, it boosts our immune system's ability to fight off illness. And so many times when athletes are at the peak of their fitness, they're also just almost at the peak of getting ill because they're working and training so hard. So often illness or injury happens. So if you can do the mindfulness practices, then you can fight off that illness and avoid injuries so that you can continue to train. And the second thing is that mindfulness is good for our minds. So I've found that, and several studies have found that mindfulness increases positive emotions and reduces the negative ones and reduces stress. And it's actually as good as medications, as good as antidepressants in fighting depression and preventing relapse if someone has a problem with an addiction, you know, like drugs or alcohol. And so also I wanted to highlight that mindfulness really changes our brains. So it actually increases the density of gray matter in the brain regions, and that gray matter is linked to learning and memory, emotion regulation, and empathy. So all those things are really, really critical with her just feeling good as a person and athletic performance. So it increases that density of gray matter. So the gray matter is really going to help help us learn skills and remember those skills, be able to regulate the emotion and empathy, you know, really caring for other people, if you're working with a team, working with teammates together. And then with focus, this is important too. Mindfulness can increase focus. And so it helps to tune out distractions and improves your attention skills. And then also, mindfulness can help with enhancing relationships. So it helps you to be able to improve your relationships with your loved ones, with team members. Makes you feel more optimistic and relaxed, and can help you to feel more accepting, more closer to one another. And related to that is that mindfulness also helps with compassion, so that when you're mindful and you're doing that kind of training, you're more likely to help someone that's in need. And if athletes are on a team, you're more likely to be a good team member and be able to help your team members, because it increases the activity in the neural networks, in our brain networks involved with, you know, understanding what others are going through, if they're suffering, or understanding that, and being able to regulate emotions. So that's going to go work two ways. If you help other people, they're going to help you, and you're in a time of need too. So it boosts that sense of compassion for others, and also self-compassion, compassion for yourself, so being able to forgive yourself when you make mistakes. That's critical. And so, and then, you know, a lot of us are working with younger kids, with or high school kids or college kids, and so there's been studies, scientific evidence in schools that teaching mindfulness in the classroom reduces behavior problems and aggression. So it can improve your happiness level and ability to pay attention. So teaching teachers that are trained in mindfulness show, and coaches just like us, when we're trained in mindfulness, we have lower blood pressure and less negative emotion and less symptoms of anxiety, and more compassion. So that's a good thing to know, that mindfulness is being taught in the schools now, but oftentimes if it's not, then we can teach our students those things. So it's going to help us ourselves with lowering blood pressure as the teachers, and have less negative emotion, and also be able to help our students with that, and athletes. And be able to handle, you know, of course, with athletics, with I've been working with a swimmer, 14-year-old girl swimmer in Texas, who's gone through a lot of emotion, of course, with this the COVID-19 and coronavirus pandemic, and, you know, difficulty with all the pools closing, and she was going through a lot of anxiety and depression, and, you know, we worked with some mindfulness techniques to be able to just accept what's happening right now, and then visualize that it's getting better, going to be better in the future, and to be able to just work with what she can. And so she was able to switch from, since the pools are starting to open again, but the pools were closed, so she started running. She hated running, but now she's able to get into running and really appreciate that more. And so it helps her to reduce those negative emotions and anxiety, and really increase positive emotions and her feelings of self-compassion, but you know, to be kind to herself. If we can first be kind to ourselves, then we're going to be kind to others as well. So that's really key. So there's so many benefits of mindfulness. So I just wanted to also give you a few key components of practicing mindfulness that many of the mindfulness leaders have identified and what I've found is really useful. And so, you know, and how exactly how to do this, how to teach it to your athletes, it can be very simple. And it's not really about sitting in a lotus position or, you know, this really stiff position. Most people would not really want to do that. If you're an athlete, often you can do mindfulness just by standing or while you're stretching. That's a really good time to do the mindfulness practices, stretching before or after a workout, because you're just kind of doing some kind of gentle movement and being able to be aware of your body, noticing what is tight and what parts are okay, what parts need loosening up. So it's about, you know, mindfulness really is a practice for life. It's about living your life as if it really mattered, moment by moment, just being in the present. So a few key components of practicing. Here's one: is just pay close attention to your breathing, especially when you're feeling intense emotion. So being able to, you know, take in a deep breath, it helps to take in, say, 5 deep breaths in through your nose. You can try that. Everyone can try that right now just as a practice. Breathe in, say, for 3 counts, breathe in through your nose. And good. And then just breathe out through your mouth and relax. And breathe out. Take 5 counts to breathe out. So you want to take a little bit longer to breathe out than the time that you breathe in. So you could breathe in through your nose again for 3 counts. Good, and then just breathe out for 5 counts, nice and slow. And what I like to do is combine like a little a stretching or yoga exercise with it. So as I'm breathing in, you know, bringing my hands over my head all the way up and kind of like reaching the sky and come up on my toes. And then I go, as I'm breathing out, then bringing my hands back, you know, like almost in a spread eagle position, back toward the back wall. So you're spreading your arms out as far as possible, slowly bringing them around in a circle, and then all the way down. And then as your arms come down, then you bend your knees, so you're coming all the way down, and then bring your arms around, and then start the circle again. So you slowly bring up your arms, cross your hands over, and then as you take in your next breath in through your nose, you're breathing in as your hands come over your head, all the way up to the sky or up to the ceiling. You reach up as far as you can, and then this is while you're breathing in. And if you like, you can actually come up on your toes. So you're really, everything is up and stretched out. And then slowly as you breathe out through your mouth and come down again and bring your hands way back, spread eagle position so that you feel like you're trying to reach back with both hands to the wall behind you. And then bring your arms all the way around, down, and then bend your knees as you come down. So that way you're combining breathing, a nice breathing mindfulness exercise, and the yoga stretching, and really opening up your chest area also, because so many of us are hunched over our computer or phone, you know, reading and way over too far forward. So you want to do as many of these kind of exercises where you're stretching out and back as you can. And I do that about 10 times. You know, the breathing in, bringing your arms up and over your head, and then back, and then all the way down. And you find that you just, as you're doing that, you know, it gives your mind a lot to think about. You're thinking about your breathing, but you're also thinking about your arms going over and around, stretching. So while you're focusing on all that, your form, making sure that you're completely getting your arms back as far as you can, opening up your chest, and it gives you a way to just focus on the present so that you're not, if your mind gets distracted, you can tell the person too that it's okay. Our minds do that all the time, and it's okay to just, you just notice that, and everybody's like that. Our minds wander a lot, and so you just notice it. And then you say, okay, mind was wandering off, so now I'll just gently bring it, take a deep breath, and begin again, and just bring it back, and then do another circle. When you're doing this sort of arm circles all the way around, then it gives you a way to, if your mind wanders, to just do another circle, and it brings your mind right back to what you're doing right now. So that's a nice exercise to do. And then, so that's the breathing, paying attention to that. And then the second thing is just really notice what you're sensing in a given moment. So just like with our visualization techniques that we do, that I've talked about many times on these calls, the sights, notice your what you're seeing, notice what you're hearing, what you're feeling in your body, the smells and taste. That ordinarily these things kind of slip by our conscious awareness, but you really want to notice them. So if you're running, you know, you can actually do one of these mindfulness exercises while you're walking or running, and you can try it while you're walking first and just notice your feet, you know, right away as your foot lands, where does it land on the first part of your walk, and then as it comes up, your toe presses down your forefoot and then the other foot. Just notice those little things as you're walking along. Notice how your arms are feeling, and just notice, bring all that into your awareness. If you're walking out in nature, that's even better, to be able to listen to the birds singing. Notice the sounds around you. Notice the wind. If there's wind, you can feel the wind on your face, wind in the air, the temperature of the day. So being able to notice all that. And then a sense of appreciation, I think, is really good, to have a sense of gratefulness, just that we can breathe and that we can walk and that we can move, appreciation for the movement that we can do. And it's just a matter of kind of slowing down for the moment, appreciating what we do have. And really, it's a nice way to see how much you can be in the present moment. If you can find a trail to walk on or to run on, so you can notice how much you can see on the trail. You know, what other wildlife are out there? You might hear where I am. I can often see squirrels running by, or deer, or other animals. And sometimes in the spring, there's mushrooms growing. And you know, just notice what's the colors around you. If there's flowers in the springtime. Now, of course, it's fall, so you notice the colors changing. So being able to notice all those things, the senses within you and then without around you as well. So bringing in all five senses to your experience. And that way, also, if there is something that's sore, you know, you might notice a calf muscle that's particularly sore or tight. Then you can, if you notice that right away, you'll become more aware of it. Then you come back and say, okay, I need to do something about that right away, like, foam roller and a massage, and work out that area so that you prevent injury. You can catch things much earlier on that way if you are noticing them, if you're in that mindfulness practice. So you're kind of like your own therapist, own physical therapist, as well as mental coach, being able to notice what's going on in your body, because all the time there's, you know, we're working out our bodies really hard as athletes, and so there's always things that need attending to. So it's good to be aware of what's going on, notice what's stiff, what's tight, and then being able to attend to that right away. So that's first step is breathing, second step is sensing, noticing your senses. And then a third thing is just recognizing when you have thoughts and emotions, they're always going to be going through. Just notice that they're fleeting. They do not define you. Realizing that the thoughts are moving, just like I said, like clouds across the sky, if you see your thoughts and emotions that way, then realizing they don't define you, and that can free you from those negative thought patterns. So just letting them go and realizing I can just move on to the next thought, to the next thing that is going on. Be aware of thoughts and feelings. Sometimes if you have a thought or feeling, it's like a reminder, oh yeah, I need to do this task, or I need to remember to do this. You know, you can write it down to remember. That's can often be helpful. And once you write it down somewhere, then take note of it, then you're able to let it go in your mind and know that it's written down, so you'll know to take care of it. You know, that's really a key point. If something comes up that, oh my gosh, I got to pay this bill, or I need to call this client, or an athlete realizes I need to get to practice this earlier today, I need to get to my practice session. That's good, important to take note of that, because your mind is telling you something important. And then once you write it down, note it somewhere, then write down what you need to take care of. Then you can go back to just feeling a sense of letting your mind do what it's good at doing, just being able to have that free-floating sensation and being able to move on to the next thing. And then a fourth thing you want to do is to tune into your body's sensations. Like, let's say a swimmer, you notice the water hitting your skin when you go in a pool. Or the way your body rests in a chair. You know, as coaches, we can look at the way our body is working. And when you're doing a stretch or something, you can notice how flexible am I, or how tight am I in certain areas. And maybe you need to slow down and not get into this exercise too quickly. So being able to notice that. And then, so just noticing your physical sensations, and so those are four things, simple things you can do. Pay attention to your breathing, and then notice what you're sensing, your visual, your auditory, your kinesthetic sense especially, sense of smell and taste. And then thirdly, your thoughts and emotions, and just recognize that they're just fleeting. Notice them, and then let them either write down what you need to do or let them go. And then tuning into your body's physical sensations. So that's four different steps that you can do. And that just noticing how your body feels. Notice if you need to do anything differently to take good care of your body. So those are some things you can do to components of practicing mindfulness. And then there's a few little exercises too. I'll include those in our notes for this next week. So yeah, just wanted to check in with you and see how what was most useful for you today, and what questions you might have. Yeah, anyone can jump in and say ask anything you'd like.
For me, it's great. I think it's very good to use to manage mind and emotions. I think it's a good tool.
Yeah, good. Have you used mindfulness before, Annel?
Yes. I have already done. It was on 8 weeks, and each week we had an exercise. One was to be during 1 week to be concentrated on feeling, the perception, to be in the present. For example, during when we take the shower, when we have a shower, when we eat, or something like that. Another one, it was body scanner. Another one was with exercise with yoga. Another one, weeks, was to observe 1 week the way when we just observe the good, the positive things, and when we are concentrated just on negative things. And the last one I don't remember, but we had each week we had some exercise.
Oh yeah, okay, great. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, there's lots of different programs like that where you can learn things. Yeah, and also I want to answer your questions, each of you, when you do your assignments. Sometimes you have questions in there, so that's great. I know, Anna L., you had one on your assignment for the marketing list in Module 7, and it might be a question that everyone has is, you said, I heard... you listen to the visualization for healing, so that's good that I included that in the module there in your members area in your homework. And then you said, whereas you talk through the visualization, do you have someone talk to you at the same time? Do you ask the client to share what he feels when you are doing the visualization? So, yeah, that was your question, and I guess you can do it either way. I think it's good to just, do a short visualization at first, maybe just 3 or 5 minutes, and then stop and then check in with the person and say, so how was that? And make sure that there's plenty of time for debriefing and sharing right then, so that if most of the time clients have a really good experience and want to share with you all the insights that they found. But sometimes, occasionally if someone had trouble focusing, or then it's good to have them share that. And then ask them for feedback, to ask them, was this too long or was it too short, or how was this visualization for you, or mindfulness exercise, and what would you like me to do differently, so that you can really tailor it for them for the next time? Maybe, they want you to speak more slowly or faster, or include certain things that are specific to their sport. So it's good to have that feedback there. Because I think sometimes if you ask the client to share what they're feeling while you're doing the visualization, then it can break up the experience and they end up just talking too much, and so they don't finish really do the visualization. So but it's good to let them know if you're having any trouble, or if you anything comes up where you're feeling uncomfortable. Then to ask, if you're in an office, you can ask them to put up one finger, or if you're on the phone, to just go ahead and say, can we pause here and talk for a moment? And you always give them permission to pause or stop the visualization and be able to share something. Because occasionally you have somebody that where something really important came up, or something disturbing. If you have a client that's had a traumatic experience in the past, let's say person that's been abused or sexually abused, they might have trouble closing their eyes and visualizing something because the image of the trauma comes up again. And so in that case, you want them to be able to stop and share what they're going through. And then you can have them, in those cases too, you can have them just do a visualization with eyes open, that they don't have to necessarily close their eyes, because sometimes closing the eyes can take them to a dark place or a scary place. It's pretty rare, but if that happens, then you could just have them keep their eyes open or just talk with you. And you can say, if you're doing the visualization or mindfulness exercise on your own, and if something comes up, if you're uncomfortable, it is okay to stop and just open your eyes and just go for a walk or something. Take a break. Take the pressure off. And then when you're ready, just begin again. And you can try to do it again. You can give the example that, people, an athlete doesn't just start out running a marathon, that you have to do many miles, shorter distance races and runs before that, before you do a longer one. And so this kind of technique takes practice as well. So it's okay to practice and do a little bit at a time. So that's why when you do the first visualization with someone, I'd say make it shorter, three or five minutes, so that they get a chance to practice it and then share with you afterward and give you feedback, and then you can tailor it, customize it to them. Yeah. And then, let's see, and you ask another question. What can we do if a client sometimes does his training logbook but doesn't do it regularly? You said, for example, with teenagers, it's hard to ask them to stay rigorous every day. And so I think, that's a good question. With a logbook or with an assignment, if they're not doing it regularly, just find out what is possible with them. What can they do? Maybe if they can't do an assignment every day, maybe they could do it every 2 days and see how that goes. Or just give them some leeway to be able to do what they can, and then be able to improve from there. I'd say to start with doing the assignment. Any amount of work that they can do at first is good work. So appreciate and celebrate what they can do. And then say, you know, even if they're just doing something once a week, then say, okay, let's shoot for next week twice a week. And maybe the way that they're doing it is not working. You could explore that. Some people like if they're keeping a logbook, they like to do it on paper. Some people prefer to do it using an app, an application on their computer. Everyone seems to be more screen-oriented these days, so you might want to do it on the computer or phone, write things down. Some people don't are more audio-oriented, so they would rather... some people are dyslexic, you know, and have trouble with reading and writing, so they could... you know, just record audio, do more like an audio logbook, record their thoughts. You know, just press record on the, most phones have a way to record a memo kind of thing where they can speak into it. So just have them do that so they can record and just speak their homework, whatever it is, what their thoughts and feelings are. So find the modality that works best for them to be able to be flexible with that. So, and then visualization, being able to just find a way that that works for them. And it's good to not be real negative about it. But be able to encourage them to do what they can. Some people have trouble getting focused at first. Or find something that's fun for them, too. If it's a younger person, sometimes they have trouble staying focused on one thing. So if there's a way that you can make it a game, make it more challenging for them, or make it fun in some way, you could do the, you know, if it's some assignment you want them to do, try to do it with them the first time. Let's say, okay, let's practice this together. Sometimes they might not understand how to do it, but have them practice together with you. So make it more fun that way. So those are some answers and to your questions with assignments on L, and I think everybody here could appreciate those questions too. If all of you on the call, if you have any other questions, you can email me and I'll answer them either by email or in our next call as well. So yeah, I just wanted to finish up here and let you know that our next call, they're always on the second and fourth Thursday of the month. And so the next one, it's coming up in October, so it'd be the 8th of October the 8th. So, if, and then the one after that would be the 22nd. So put those on your calendar, October 8th, and then October 22nd. Amazing how the time flies here. So, yeah, just check in and see what, at the end, I would like to ask what was most helpful for you today, or was there a nugget or some helpful piece that you could take away with you, maybe something you'd like to practice at home or practice with your clients?
Yes. First, it's great because I wanted to work on mindfulness, and finally I didn't find the time. Thanks to today, I will use first on myself, and then I have a client, and I have to work on anger management, and I think it will be great for him because he doesn't, if you want, when there is a situation, he never realized how suddenly he become angry, and I think mindfulness would be good for him to be more in present, to be more conscient. About what happened in his body, and how he can realize the little sign which can say to him, oh, be careful, manage your anger. Do you understand what I say?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, there's for anger management, which is a good, really great use of this mindfulness tool, and being able to, one thing you could do is, just doing a visualization or a meditation where you're kind of extending feelings of compassion toward people. So starting with yourself, you can imagine, you start with yourself and then you branch out to other people. Imagine feeling compassion, feeling a love and care for yourself first. And there's an exercise called havening, where if you're with yourself, you could just, it's almost like hugging yourself. You put one hand, put your hand on your shoulders, and then you just gently go from your shoulders down to your elbows. It's like giving yourself a hug kind of thing, and it's in saying to yourself, I'm caring for myself, or I'm giving love and compassion to myself, and I'm going to be okay. And it's a calming kind of exercise, I think, to be sometimes, especially with this, with the pandemic and with COVID-19, a lot of people are alone and they can't or they don't have. And they can't get a hug from anyone or any kind of compassion. They feel very frustrated. So you can start with yourself and just be able to give yourself compassion. And then you, imagine being compassionate to yourself. And then you imagine being compassionate to an acquaintance, just somebody that you know a little bit, but not too much. And then you imagine being compassionate to someone that's giving you a hard time, someone you're having difficulty with. Imagine extending compassion to them and saying, blessings to you, or I feel compassion. I know it's hard to do that sometimes when we're having difficulty, but being able to maybe see their point of view from another perspective, and then being able to finally to have compassion for everyone, for the world. So that's a good exercise to start with yourself and then extend out to other people as well. So, that's great. Well, thank you, everyone that's on the call. Thank you, Anna L., and other ones listening here. I know Farley has just joined us for the course. Welcome, Farley, and George and Greg are going through the course, and Dave. I know Dave's just moved to Utah, and he'll be joining us shortly too, I think, the next one. So stay tuned for, there's so many other people too that are on the call and listening to this, I'll have the recording up shortly in our private members area. You just click on the yellow schedule button and you can see them all down there below. All the recordings, actually for the last, probably 8-9 years or so, are there. So a vast variety of resources there for you. So we'll have our next call on the October 8th. And I'll be in touch and send you the recording, send you an email with all the information here. And I look forward to you all practicing the mindfulness techniques. That'll be great. So thank you. Thank you, everyone, for coming.
Thank you.
Take care now. All right. Great to talk with you. Have a good week. And we'll be in touch.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Thanks, Kay. All right. Bye now.
Bye. Bye-bye.